This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of February 2nd, 2025. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome to edition number 381. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support The Breaker. On this edition, headlines from the Pacific Rim and the Pacific Northwest. I award a virtual Nanaimo bar to a difference maker, and on the big deal feature, the Hogue Commission's final report confirmed but downplayed foreign interference by China, Russia, India, and Iran. One of the people who testified at the public inquiry is my guest, Kenny Chu, the Conservative MP in Steveston Richmond East from 2019 to 2021, who was the victim of a pro-China disinformation campaign. And a follow-up about Vancouver's Memorial South Park. It won't be closed and turned into a training center for the FIFA World Cup 26 after all. I welcome back Cindy Heinrichs and Beth Ringdahl of Friends of Memorial South Park, who are celebrating a win for their grassroots campaign. This is the big deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast. Commissioner Marie-José Hogue closed the book on her year-long investigation of foreign interference in Canada's 2019 and 2021 federal elections. She found that China's government did interfere, but she downplayed the impacts. She also found no evidence of traitors in Canada's parliament. One of the people who testified at the public inquiry was Kenny Chu. He is the former Conservative Member of Parliament from 2019 to 2021. In Steveston, Richmond East, he was a victim of Chinese interference. Kenny Chu is trying to make a comeback, hoping to win the nomination to win back the seat in this year's election. He is up against former Harper Conservative MP Wai Young, who has a reputation for attracting support from pro-Beijing voters and donors. Here is my interview with Kenny Chu. You were a central figure in this. You were defeated in the 2021 snap election. There was evidence of a coordinated effort by supporters of the Chinese Communist Party, some of whom were seen in a meeting in Steveston with Trudeau Liberal Parham Baines that was captured on video and shared on WeChat. I grabbed that and turned that into a story, and that formed part of a major investigation. That's referenced in the report. There were no charges after that investigation by the Office of the Commissioner of Canada Elections. But what do you say about the final report and its conclusions?
I think to summarize my feeling, I guess I can say that it's disappointing as expected, because there were not much of a hope I have on a hastily mandated commission like the one that we have seen. Your audience would probably be benefited to recall the path that we have come. Since the 2021 election, there has not been one day without any news that talk about foreign interference playing a key part in 2021. And yet the Liberal government has been trying to sweep all the allegations under the carpet, culminating to in 2022, I believe that would be in November 2022, when even Canada's security intelligence community was so frustrated that there are people who decided to risk their career and even their personal safety by becoming whistleblower to Canada's media. Global News and Globe and Mail specifically. And that had actually continued for a few months until 2023, in early 23, Q1, when the Liberals finally say, fine. Okay, we're succumbing to this. And what they have done instead of calling a full-scale commission to look into how wide and how deep the foreign interference issues in Canada has been, they ask David Johnson to be a special rapporteur. And Mr. Johnson, without calling important witnesses like Aaron O'Toole, had decided to draft his report, even send it to translation before he finally sat down with Mr. O'Toole. And of course, the report that came out from David Johnson was that nothing to see here. There's nothing. Don't worry about it. Trust me. And that was in 2023. And then we lost a few more months. More explosive data point was gathered by further whistleblowing events. And then finally, in September 2023, the Liberal government had decided to, okay, fine, we'll call a commission. And the commission was a very laser-focused, narrowed. It's not to see how foreign interference had penetrated and you know, impacted Canada. But, you know, in 2019 and 2021, you know, certain specific areas, and to look at the alphabet soups of organizations that Justin Trudeau came up with in 2017, you know, how effective it is, you know, whether there's any room for improvement and all that good stuff. The whole commission, it's supposed to table a report last December, 2024 December, so they have a little bit more than 1 year. And we know that the commission's mandate, on the other hand, has been expanded to cover first India in November 2023, and then subsequently ENSACOP report in June 2024. So more to look at, still very narrowed mandate, and then the time doesn't change much until Judge Hogue actually asks for a one-month extension. So with all that backdrop in place, the Liberal government also had decided to pick, of all people, instead of a professional national security expert, professors or senior bureaucrats that's been handling international relations and all that, they've decided to pick an appeal court judge from Quebec, of all places. And we know that foreign interference has been happening a lot across Canada. But, you know, Quebec probably will have their own specific or very special view on the issue. And to ask a judge who professionally is supposed to assess whether things are meeting a very high judicial, you know, level, you know, she's tasked to look at this very narrow, but yet not enough time to cover it. Commission. So that's why I said I am disappointed, as expected. I didn't expect much to start with. If you recall, at the beginning, there were also allegations that she's just a puppet for Justin Trudeau and the Liberal government, and because she didn't even grant, I believe it was the Conservative Party, as a participant status with the lawyers and resources and all that. But thankfully, she did have a change of heart and then allow the Uyghurs and other human rights organizations to be provided with resources like that. But I personally, I still didn't expect too much from this. And I'm glad, Bob, to tell you that I wasn't disappointed too much. But I'm in disappointment, as kind of as expected.
Now, Kenny, you were one of the people that testified at the Hogue Commission, so you have a greater interest in this, especially since your riding was targeted by foreign interference by actors favorable to China. Now, has anyone been held accountable in this report? If not, who should be held accountable?
That's a million-dollar question, isn't it? Because the Judge Hogue report seems to have provided a lot of information, and she did, to be fair, provided 51 recommendations. However, I think one of the criticism that I have with her is that there is very little you know, accountability that she addressed in the report, in the whole commission, let alone political accountability. I know that she's not partisan, she's not supposed to be, you know, left-leaning, right-leaning, center, whatever. I totally understand. But had anybody had asked the question why Bill Blair had decided to set aside the Warren to survey one of the key liberal organizers, and he set aside that request for 51 days, if I remember correctly, multiple weeks. And this is from our national security department, like CSIS. And it's unbelievable that things like that happen repeatedly, not just in the ministerial level. Why would the prime minister, the prime minister of the land, in the day and age of foreign interference, since 2017, when they kind of jumped to their feet and put in the changes, and 2019 in the nomination scandal that they had, in the 2021 during the election and foreign interference, and yet Justin Trudeau still sat on reports and did not read the report himself as he testified. Why not? Why is he not doing his job as a prime minister, be briefed, take action? And why was the discrepancy, the way he handled the allegation of Indian interference versus the dragging the heel interference accusation of the PRC? There has been zero political accountability that's being held. Yes, Judge Hogue did say that the government acted too slowly. The government take too long to do your job. They did poorly in communicating. But in Chinese, there is an accusation that says, we're here to help you by scolding you less. And it's hard to avoid having the impression that Judge Hogue's report gives that exact impression that, you know, oh, you communicated too poorly. Oh, you take too long to do this and do that. But what about other questions? Why is the government seems to target on Russia's interference and jumped in their feet literally on India interference, and yet just basically sat on and watch and do nothing before the election, during the election, and after the 2021 election? Why not? So all these questions are still linger, and unfortunately I don't think we'll be able to find the answer to that in Judge Hogue's report.
And one of the groups that did react to the report was the Canadian Friends of Hong Kong. They called Commissioner Hogue out of touch, essentially. They accused her of willful blindness. Their main point is that because Commissioner Hogue called Canada's democratic institutions robust, that there's evidence throughout her own report that contradicts that statement, that they really aren't robust. And the Canadian Friends of Hong Kong, they basically said that one incident is too many. There really is no margin for error here. Do you agree with their assessment?
To a certain degree, yes. I understand their frustration and disappointment. Like I said, I didn't have much expectation that I set myself up for, and that's why I wasn't as frustrated and disappointed as them. Partly, I think it's because when I look at the Liberal government's pick for this commission, I kind of already see that they are setting up the bar very, very, very high using a court level. So they'll have to have, just like you mentioned, the Office of Canada Election, they also have to find evidence that meet the court of law level. And we're talking about, you know, intelligence, espionage, transnational repression. All these are not necessarily at the court of law kind of evidential requirement, but then it doesn't mean that it didn't happen. take another example that I may think of. It looks like Judge Hogue sees it as her task to answer the question whether the 2019 election or the 2021 election, the election result has been impacted by a foreign government or interference. You know, the election result itself, changing of government. You know, by setting up a ridiculous premise and questions like that, you know, it's easy for her to say, no, you know, none of these interference has changed the election result. We understand that there were 338 ridings in the 2021 election. So in order to for a foreign power to come in and did the interference so much so that it will change the result, it will have to be an unbelievable scale and brute force. Now the irony is that by not shining lights into that corner, she may actually have encouraged setting the bar so high. She may actually have encouraged these regime in continuing what they have done in Canada, and that's not something that that we are expecting. And the other example I can think of is by just singling out Steve's and Richmond East, but you know, as a riding that may have their results changed, she is ignoring more than a dozen riding that the Conservative has argued that has been impacted by foreign interference, that disinformation that's been circulated against Aaron O'Toole, and even using Kenny Chu, the candidate for Stephen Richmond East in Toronto. So it almost looked like, just judging from her report, that these people who had been fooled, these people who has been exploited in all the other ridings, doesn't matter. No, yeah, like I know the bar cannot be as high as even one vote being exploited by disinformation. It's not acceptable. That would be a way too high as a bar, and it will take, you know, forever to get there. But not even to mention about the large scale of impact on the disinformation outside of CFM Richmondese, to me is a bit underplaying. And there are certain individuals in Twitter X who right after the election had looked at the election's result, and they come to the conclusion that in many of the ridings, in the adjacent ridings, the Conservative has bucked the trend and had gone up in the support and number of votes, except for these ridings that has a higher concentration of Chinese Canadians. And Judge Hogue had not looked at that at all. And it's just saying, oh, everybody else is fine. It didn't change the election result in 2019, 2021. And even for Steve's and Richmond East, she was using, again, the judicial court of law language to describe it. May have been impacted, the result of Steve's and Richmond East, due to disinformation, misinformation from a foreign adversarial government.
For you, that you're running for the nomination to try to take back Steveston Richmond East in the 2025 federal election, whenever that happens, whenever the Liberals get their house in order with their new leader, the new prime minister, supposed to happen in March, and when they end the prorogation of parliament, we'll know shortly after that when we might go to the polls this year. But on the broader issue of foreign interference, what should happen next?
Well, Bob, I, you know, one thing I have so far been very critical of Judge Hogue's, but one thing I have to give her credit for is to at least describe the conundrum and the situations that Canada is facing with the word existential crisis. It is not an exaggerated word that we're in. Canada has been a multicultural society, a country, especially in urban area, for decades. And we're not gonna, it's not gonna change anytime soon. And the thing is, in other words, there are gonna be culture mixing in it, and that leaves a huge door for these adversarial countries, even those that we sometimes call allies, to come in and influence at the expense of Canada, you know, for their benefit. And so if we don't do something, if we don't at least progressively continue being vigilant, we stand to have more fractured societies, as we have seen. So I can only pray and hope. I you know, it is my thinking that we need to look at the 51 recommendations that Judge Hogue had provided very seriously, and start implementing many of them, and especially the ones that does not require legislative changes, especially those that does not that do not require legislative changes. You know, any government should look into tightening them up. You know, when we discuss about this topic, it's almost like as if you and I assume there is no federal government in Ottawa anymore. Unfortunately, sadly, that's exactly what the problem that we're facing. Ottawa, it's in complete chaos right now. So even if we had a federal government that is fully in charge with undivided attention, with their track record, people should not be hopeful, be holding too much hope on their implementation of the lower hanging fruits that Judge Hogue has identified. So I think what I'm talking about here is in the context of a new federal government that has a fresh and strong mandate from the Canadian people, that they will be able to tighten up. They don't have to worry about you know, another election for, you know, years, that they will be able to help tighten up these regulations, these rules, because like Judge Hogue is saying, you know, Canada's it's facing existential threat, not just from Donald Trump, but also by other foreign governments, identifying her report.
That was Kenny Chiu, the Conservative MP in Steveston, Richmond East from 2019 to 2021. He testified at the Hogue Commission public inquiry into foreign interference. Less than 500 days to FIFA World Cup 26 at BC Place Stadium. The score is Memorial South Park Neighbors 1, City Hall 0. Listeners of edition number 371 on November 24th heard from Cindy Heinrichs and Beth Ringdahl, the founders of Friends of Memorial South Park. They were campaigning against Vancouver City Hall and Parks Board's plans to close the heart of their park and turn the cricket oval into a temporary training pitch for FIFA World Cup 26 teams. In December, civic officials awarded an early works contract to a construction company worth almost $9 million. But work did not begin as scheduled after New Year's Day. On January 20th, a victory for the people versus FIFA. The city announced training will instead take place at the Vancouver Whitecaps facility on the University of BC's Point Grey campus. Work will continue, however, at Killarney Park in Vancouver. On January 25th, Heinrichs, Ringdahl, and dozens of park neighbors gathered for a picnic party. NDP MLA Mabel Elmore and Green Party Park Board Commissioner Tom Digby also showed up. I spoke with Cindy Heinrichs and Beth Ringdahl about their Our Park, Not FIFA's Field campaign. You've won the battle. The City of Vancouver decided to go somewhere else, to not close Memorial South Park and hold FIFA 26 training here in June and July
2026, which would have meant closing in January 2025 and reopening in October 2026 or so. What's your reaction? How do you feel?
Cheers.
We're thrilled. Elated.
Overjoyed.
Relieved. Mm-hmm. And very heartened that the community came together and fought this because that is what it took. It took people signing the petition. It took people writing letters. The letters are really important. Anytime somebody is upset about something in their community, they need to realize that writing those letters actually makes a huge difference. And a lot of people came together to get it to the point where the people with power noticed. And then the Parks Board really took this up and spearheaded this being moved to UBC.
It was a movement.
It was a movement.
It was a community movement.
Yes. So it started with the community. The Parks Board heard us. They moved it. And then there were other people, obviously, in play there. But they really took the ball to use the...
That's a soccer term.
There you go.
But I think it really was the Parks Board. And I think the province did a lot behind the scenes that Mabel Elmore, our MLA... Herbert, yeah. Spencer, Chandra Herbert. I think that there was a lot of people behind the scenes, and Don Davies, our MP, or he will be our MP when the boundaries change. But it was a group effort.
Very much so.
There was a community effort.
So it was a community getting together and saying, this is not okay with what you're doing. We're not okay with what you're doing to our community. And they really... people rallied and our voices were heard, so we feel like it's a victory for democracy.
Mm-hmm. The day that Trump was inaugurated was the day we found out we got to keep our park.
It was perfect. It was like a balance in the universe, you know? It was
it was amazing.
But it wasn't so easy at the start, though. You were... in some ways talking to a wall to some of those people at City Hall, to the politicians. It was hard to get their attention at first.
It was very hard to get their attention.
Yes. No one would even tell us what the plan was. We had, you know, found it online, but, you know, the bathrooms were going to be behind a fence for 2 years.
So everybody who was using the other areas of the park was going to have... We kept asking, do we get porta potties? Will they be pink? Nobody was going to even provide washroom facilities for this community using the lacrosse field.
So that the FIFA players could have their showers.
Yeah.
It was terrible.
It was really hard, actually. But, it's, you know, there's a word for that. When you have to work till you get to this point where... What is that?
And perseverance.
Thanks. Well, it was perseverance. I think...
we were tenacious.
Yeah.
And I think Remembrance Day, the armistice ceremony, we had so many civic elected officials here with Tom Digby, really helped introduce us to Trevor Ford at City Hall, some councillors. And I think them just coming to see this beautiful park actually helped. And then we had a few well-timed emails after that.
There was a tipping point, I think, at some point when they realized we had, I think, like 1,500 people on the petition. Mm-hmm. And then there was an information session on November 30th. Oof. And they expected, apparently, one of the junior staffers told me they expected about 20 people. And the conservative number of how many people showed up was of 200. And I think that made a big difference because people realized, and people were asking questions. But I think that the people with power realized, well, wait a second. People aren't okay with this. Uh-huh. And there's a stink here. And a lot of people ask questions, really good questions at that. And I think it made a difference.
I think also maybe South Van, it's a big win for South Van too, because, you know, historically they just pop things in our neighborhood.
Really?
And I think this is the first time that really there was just a group that got together to say, you know, we are organized, we are...
Relentless.
And, you know, I think they thought it was an area where they could kind of do this and be like, oh, sorry.
And in contrast, I'm hearing from people from Killarney area right now that they're not happy about it. And they're wondering why ours is stopped and theirs isn't. And I think the difference is that there was no voice. I don't know why what happened that was different, but I think it was, you know, some of us shouted super, super loudly, and then other people joined us. So it was that joining in of voices, but that community, there are people apparently who are not happy about this either. So, this is how democracy works, right? Is all the people get together and speak. It's not just something that happens on election day.
Do you think that City Hall and the Park Board may have learned a lesson because they decided about this in secret in October of 2023 and waited until mid-July 2024 to announce it? There was no public consultation. It was, this is what we're going to do at the park.
I don't know if they learned a lesson in general. I think that the Parks Board, I can't speak for City Council because I haven't interacted very much with City Council aside from Adrian Carr and Pete Fry, who I felt really heard us. Apart from them, I haven't really heard very much of the messaging, but I know from my interactions with the Parks Board that they really heard us. I think that they didn't realize what was actually happening here. They were told we were getting a legacy. We weren't getting a legacy, and that's what they recognized. I think it was December 9th in the Parks Board meeting. So I think they realized they needed to look at it more closely. So I feel like it. They actually said in that session, I believe, that if they had known in 2022, they would never have okayed this in the first place. So I do think that they had the best intentions. And once they realized how upset people were, they took action. The Parks Board, I'm speaking of specifically, because they did spearhead this. Well, you know, we spearheaded it, and then they took the ball.
But I do think it's a lesson for the whole World Cup committee,
yes,
and the community to ask more questions about, yes, the $580 million. This is kind of the canary in the coal mine for us was a coal mine. But you know, to take our lesson for, you know, 15 million prior to security, we were in Trevor Ford in City Hall, and he said this decision has saved the city tens of millions of dollars. So I think maybe it's when they started looking at the security budget on top of the actual park budget, that probably also sealed the deal for UBC, because they had to go do the security there anyways, because Team Canada will be using it as a base camp, which again, that doesn't seem to be formally announced yet. But
so what next for you and for the park?
Oh,
we're just gonna enjoy it.
No, it's our 100-year centennial next year, and we didn't think we could be in our park.
We were actually going to be not allowed on any part of our park for 6 weeks, starting around the time of the 100th birthday of this park, which was created by women, by the way, who wanted to honor the people, the men who fell in World War I. And we weren't going to be allowed to celebrate on this land.
The men that fought for our freedom.
Yeah, it was just, talk about tone deafness. So we're planning our centennial. And we're actually hoping to get it turned back to the name that it originally had, which is South Memorial Park. Nobody in this neighborhood who grew up here calls it Memorial South Park. So we're hoping for that.
Yeah. And in our meeting, City Hall sounded very supportive, because they say they really love centennials. And we already asked about potentially getting this declared a historic part of the city. With little champagne. So especially the field house, for example, if we could bring back some of the heritage elements and get this declared that there would never be any used for commercial purposes, that it will stay track, green space, cricket pitch, without, you know, and that community consultation would have to be in place. So we don't have to fear anyone taking over the park again. Mm-hmm. That was scary to think that decision could happen without us knowing.
Mm-hmm. And anything else you'd like to say?
I have one thing, is that we sort of have some disinformation on social media that we've lost this amazing soccer facility, and I think we really would love to have that, you know,
clarified
that of you know,
what was actually, what the actual legacy was, which Parks Board recognized on, I think it was the 9th of December, there was no legacy. Mm-hmm. Parks Board recognized that. So there seems to be this disinformation happening. People think we were going to get a gym. People think we were getting this FIFA grade field that was, we can't afford, the city can't afford to maintain a FIFA grade field. Why would they?
Yeah. But this field is in such bad condition that it needs all the drainage system and stuff, and this track, and like,
so there's,
it's beautiful.
Yeah.
Like, why are people saying this?
We would like there to be some clarity on what actually was being promised. Because people, there seems to be a lot of messaging online right now that we've taken something away from the community by stopping this FIFA field from happening, and that's actually not the case. And if people look at the record, they will see that that's actually not the case.
That was Cindy Heinrichs and Beth Ringdahl, the founders of Friends of Memorial South Park. Keep listening to the podcast and reading the Breaker.news for coverage of FIFA World Cup 26. Now it's time on the Breaker.news podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim. In the Taiwan news, high-speed rail loop of Taiwan proposed. Return trip from south to north takes about 3 hours. Railway Bureau Deputy Director General Yang Cheng-chun said the loop would comprise 4 connected sections, with each taking about 90 minutes of travel time. The Kaohsiung-Pingtung phase is set to begin in 2028. It should take around 11 years to complete. In ABC News Australia, what we know about the couple allegedly linked to the Doral caravan. 2 people have been allegedly named in a search warrant connected to a caravan filled with explosives found in Sydney's northwest. The caravan was discovered in Doral earlier in January. The couple are considered to be on the periphery of a broader anti-Semitism investigation. In the Los Angeles Times, what or who started the Palisades fire? 2 leading theories emerge as investigation intensifies. Sources with knowledge of the inquiry said there are 2 leading theories. An 8-acre blaze that fire officials thought they had put out on January 1st in the same area reignited and spread because of intense winds, or a new fire was somehow sparked nearby that morning. Sources have told the Times the blaze appears to have human origins. That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.news podcast.
Breaker.news podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest.
In Willamette Week, in Oregon, Trump's base would suffer most from Medicaid cuts. A reduction in federal funds would hammer Oregonians, particularly in rural Oregon. State figures show 33.5% of Oregonians are on the Oregon Health Plan, the state's Medicaid program. One reason Trump might be cautious about cutting too heavily into Medicaid: in Oregon, at least, rates of Medicaid enrollment are highest in Trump strongholds. In Crosscut, Seattleites will vote on competing measures to fund social housing. On February ballot Proposition 1A, it would produce $50 million a year from an excess wealth tax on businesses. Proposition 1B would draw $10 million a year from the jumpstart tax. Social housing advocates in Seattle argue that with the city's ever-rising cost of living, middle-income earners such as teachers, librarians, and service workers are also getting priced out of the city by the private housing market. Proponents also tout the fact that building decisions would be made in part by tenant governing boards, and new housing would be built to green passive house standards. And check out thebreaker.news and bobmackin.substack.com for the stories behind these headlines. How much were taxpayers dinged for the NDP's ad agencies, private jets, bus, Facebook, and Airbnb? And Vancouver's World Cup organizers have big plans for surveillance camera network. Read the stories behind the headlines. Go to thebreaker.news and introducing bobmackin.substack.com. Visit me there too.
That's Cascadia Calling on this edition of the Breaker.news podcast. It don't matter what color you are, 'cause love will conquer hate. You won't stand alone. You won't stand alone. brought to you by Spruce Hill Contracting.
Every week we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo bar to people making a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to the communities of Christians, Jews, Muslims, Sikhs, Hindus, and Buddhists who work for the common good across British Columbia, often apart, but often together. It is World Interfaith Harmony Week in BC until February 7th. And you can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo bar? Send me an email to bob at thebreaker.news. That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of February 2nd, 2025. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on the 2nd of February in 2005, the Government of Canada legalized same-sex marriage? And on the 2nd of February in 1990, South Africa's government unbanned the African National Congress and vowed to free Nelson Mandela. Now you know. Send me your feedback. Send me your story ideas to bob at thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. And introducing bobmackin.substack.com. Visit me there too. Sign up for the free email newsletter and get updates to your inbox, or follow The Breaker News for news as it happens on X, formerly Twitter. And you can support The Breaker for as little as $7 a month. For more information, go to bobmackin.substack.com. Until next week.